Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And this is your show on metaphysics and spirituality. We're going to continue from last week's show dealing with the lost continent of Atlantis and just the prehistoric nature of what this place was actually like. Some of the things that I think I have a pretty good understanding about, how this fits in with both paleontology and archaeology, and just generally how it fits in with the difference between evolution and we'll call it metaphysical evolution, which is not necessarily saying that evolution doesn't exist, but there's things to understand about the whole process, including de-evolution, which is not presently accepted or even thought about, I think, by most people who are evolutionary biologists. But at any rate, let's talk about where we started from last week, quickly giving you a synopsis. And that was that if we go back before recorded history, there was a place in time when different, we'll call them civilizations, not just one, but a series of them, existed on a continent that we now refer to as Atlantis, and that was its name back in those days. This starts now, if we are talking about the time period that I was referring to in last week's show, it goes all the way back to, at the very, very beginning, about 6 million years ago, there were some seed groups, some very small groups of people, but they weren't developing much of a civilization until about 4.5 million years ago. Now, I understand that, and as I said last week, some people think that there weren't any human beings around at that time. However, we have discovered, us today being, have discovered that there were hominids, pre-humans, and earlier forms of human beings as early as, say, maybe 500,000 years ago or 250,000 years ago. But the point is that these particular people are actually degenerated, some of them, from much earlier of these races or sub-races of Atlanteans that go back millions of years before. Evolution doesn't go in just one direction. It can de-evolve. And this explains why we find some of the anomalies that exist. Such as an example, if we were to look at a species called Homo erectus, some people call it Homo ergaster, which is really kind of the same thing. One was slightly earlier than the other, but they really were both pretty much the same. And we don't have any genetic evidence to know otherwise, but it appears that they were the same species as Homo erectus. This is actually a de-evolved form of the third sub-race of Atlanteans. Some of those that were not very virtuous and developed themselves somewhat in isolation after their race kind of fell apart, as civilization did as well, and were supplanted by a fourth civilization. They ended up going into the direction of Africa, which Atlantis is very close, actually, to the shores, at least the western shores of Africa. And they settled in Africa. And eventually, they moved out of Africa into the Middle East, China, and all over the place. They were everywhere to be found. Now, the interesting thing about these people is that they were around for a couple of million years. And I want you to think about this. We haven't been around. I'm talking about Homo sapiens sapiens. Us haven't been around for more than a few tens of thousands of years, okay? And we have gone from being, you know, basically hunters and gatherers to traveling to the moon and Mars and all over the place, right? We've even gone to the edge of our own solar system. And we have done amazing things in terms of development. That's in that period of time. These people that were the Homo erectus variety, they started making some tools, we'll call it, a couple million years ago, And these tools that they made did not change significantly during that same period of time. Now, what's the chances of that? I mean, okay, their brain size was not quite as good as ours. They weren't really super geniuses, but evolution would say that their brain size should have increased, just as ours has, that they should have become more advanced in their civilization. They should have developed because there were stresses in the environment that would have caused that. What were the stresses? Well, there were animals around that were ferocious. There was weather changes that were much more severe than anything we've encountered, and yet they didn't. Those are natural causes for them to have evolved, but they didn't. They never changed. It's anti-evolutionary. And there's no good explanation if you use evolutionary science, except that if something de-evolves, it doesn't have the opportunity to re-evolve in most circumstances over time. It can't re-evolve because it has reached a point where it has degraded in its structure, both genetically and in other ways that are more spiritual. And so the results are that it just can't go anywhere. That's what happened to these people. Now, interestingly, this has happened time and time again. There's a whole bunch of different versions of early humanity and hominids, which is sort of like pre-humanity, that are inexplicable in that they didn't particularly evolve. Isn't that incredible? Now, there are some people who say, oh, well, the Homo erecti, they all turned into this or particular species or that particular species, such as Neanderthals. Actually, that's just pure whimsy. There is absolutely no evidence to support that. As a matter of fact, the evidence goes the exact opposite way. So, you know, there's just a lot of nonsense going on right there. Okay, let's talk about Atlantis. I know many of you are saying, well, what do you think I get to the part about Atlantis? Because I really is. Okay, yeah, I'll tell you more about it. So last week I also told you about some of the earliest parts of Atlantean civilization. And I thought that it would be good to talk about now some of the mid parts and the latter parts, because we have enough of a show to go on with this. Now, if you would like to call in and talk about this, you can. 877-876-5227 in the U.S. If you're in Canada, 888-815-9756. Love to hear from you. Give me a call. Also, for those of you at a computer, although I won't answer you on the air right now, you can always get me at thoughts@whylifeis.com. Okay, so here's the deal, and it's really interesting. After the first couple of sub-races of Atlanteans, which I described last week, and I'm not going to go back into it. You can go to the archives, of course, and listen to them. The Atlanteans developed a fairly sophisticated, by standards even of today, civilization. They were mostly focused in on how they felt, their emotions, some people would say. I'll call it love. I like love and empathy better than emotions, but they did both. And they were mostly focused on that, and they weren't so focused on how we live today, which is mostly mentally in a structured fashion. So their thinking wasn't all about concepts and structure of thought and logic. They weren't very logical people, but they were people who used a lot of creative imagination. And their society represented this. They were a different race from us, genetically. They would have dozens of different genetic markers that would prove they were different from us. Unfortunately, I don't know that we'll have a science to ever be able to show this right, at least in the near future. So they were different, but we were them. This is going to surprise some of you, because some of us incarnated way back in those days. Some of us, not everybody. And so some of us, particularly those in North America, many of you are hearing me, I'm speaking, of course, from the U.S., but many of you are hearing me from either the United States or Canada, but we have listeners all around the world, so I recognize that this is an international-based program. But at any rate, the people more associated with the North American continent had a lot to do with some of these later races, which we're going to talk about today, of Atlantis. And some of us have even, we'll say, pieces of memory. A fellow, I think his name was Will, I called last week. And at the end of the show, unfortunately, I didn't have much time to talk with him, but he was saying that he had had somebody tell him in some kind of reading that he used to be out of Atlantis, and I said, you know, it's probably true. I have some scattered memories here and there that I think are valid memories of having been there. So, and you may also, you know, so some of us have, you know, so like roots, you might say, go back to that part of life in this world. Now, the people who did live, who might have been some of us who, in earlier incarnation, who did live there, were mostly focused on developing their astral nature, which includes love and emotions and feelings and all the stuff that, and empathy, all the stuff that we associate with together in that same body. And they were trying to develop this body in a way that would be as virtuous as possible, meaning that it would create more of their creator within their own society. That's a good thing. They did so sometimes knowingly, because they actually, this is going to amaze some of you, they were fairly spiritual, especially as they moved into what is called the fourth subrace. The third subrace was not all that spiritual, but it was it developed a lot of civilization around military and winning over a much earlier, prior civilization that had turned somewhat dark in its last subrace called the Lemurians. Most of them were not particularly bad people, but the last one, the seventh subrace, was pretty nasty. And they were very big and powerful people, so the Atlanteans had to be kind of a little bit more cunning than their adversaries in order to win a series of wars that this third subrace ended up fighting, unfortunately. And this was through, you know, travel overseas. So these people had considerable ability to move about the planet by using oceans and seas. They, amazingly, were able to set up colonies of themselves in a number of places, which actually seeded the planet with human beings millions of years ago. Now, I realize that, again, you know, where's the evidence? Well, a lot of it got hidden. I'll explain that by the end of the show today. Why? How come we have such trouble trying to find evidence of this? These prehistoric civilizations. Okay, so eventually the third subrace diminished because of a change in a thing called ray energy. Those of you who have listened to the show before have some idea about that. And the focus became more on the sacral center, which had to do with like inner knowledge, inner understanding of themselves, compared to the throat center, which had to do with externalization of communication and military stuff and all the stuff that I said that these people already had. So it's like some people could adjust and change, and others probably did not do as well. The people who can adjust and change were usually those who were living more lives that were virtuous and light and more like their creator, and the other ones were more selfish, and they ended up being, well, you guessed it, they were the ones who left and ended up being some of these de-evolved people in Africa and elsewhere. Yeah, that's what happened. So eventually we ended up with having a fourth subrace. Now that fourth subrace started about 2 million years ago. And it developed into becoming the golden age of Atlantis. Now this is the fun part. This is the part I like to talk about. Because rather than saying about, you know, a bunch of things that really didn't go so well, this was probably, in terms of civilization now, the most successful civilization ever for any humans on Earth. They developed the highest order of civilization there is. They were fairly virtuous. I mean, as much, probably more so than we are today. Now, they weren't as mentally developed, but they were, we'll say, spiritually developed. And that's really important to understand the difference. They really sought to create more of their creator in themselves and in their world. They tried to live in peace and harmony together. And they tried to join the material side of life with the spiritual side of life without there being a great imbalance between them. This is what the sacral center does, and it's controlled by a thing called fourth ray energy. So it's just an amazing thing, because although they took hundreds of thousands of years to develop themselves, they were developing themselves much more slowly than we do today. They did so in a way that was consistently better in terms of spirituality than we are. And about 1.5 million years ago, they kind of reached a peak. And during that time, living in Atlantis was a pretty amazing place. I'm going to tell you some of the things about what life was directly like there when we come back from break. But I want you to think about this, that this was a place that many of us would feel comfortable in and be somewhat familiar with. And it was a place that is considerably better, in my opinion, than the present state of the world today. So although we've come a long way in terms of our mental development and some aspects of the higher aspects of complexity and civilization, we have not really developed ourselves spiritually beyond the point where these people did. So it's something to think about until we come back from break, which will be in a couple of minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Well, we're back, and this is Why Life Is. I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And again, we're talking about metaphysics and spirituality, specifically about the prehistoric accounts of Atlantis, the lost continent, some people could refer to it. I'm talking about different civilizations that were sub-races of humans, somewhat different than us, but recognizable still as human beings, and also some of us were there in earlier incarnations. So it's something to really think about. And I'm going to now go into detail, because people like that, but I like it too, about the fourth subrace, sometimes referred to as the more golden age, about 1.5 million years ago, give or take. During which time the entire Atlantean continent was in existence, which was a fairly large continent by, you know, even by today's standards. It wasn't as big as most of the continents we are familiar with, but it was still fairly large. It was a little bit smaller than Australia in total land area. So it's not big as continents go on Earth, but still fairly large. And this continent was in the Atlantic Ocean, mostly north of the equator. A lot of people have asked me about that, and it's mostly north of the equator. The last part of the continent to exist at all are the four islands that sometimes, you know, are referred to as Azores. They are off the coast of Portugal. And those islands are actually the peaks of the tallest mountains that were on Atlantis, which at that time were also some of the tallest, if not the tallest, mountains on Earth. Very important to know that, too, for people who are interested. Some people think Atlantis was actually in the Mediterranean, which wasn't that far away from it, because they have found places that resemble it. Actually, those were later colonies and other things that confused people. But in reality, and there were big islands, but they weren't at nearly the size of Atlantis. Okay, so what was life like? What is it? Let's get down to the nitty-gritty of this thing. Let's say we were walking around this glorious continent, and what would we discover? What would we see? Now, first of all, people lived primarily, especially if we go back 1.5 million years ago, in stone buildings and houses. They preferred that type of architecture in comparison to, say, wood or other types of material. And they would generationally live in these houses that would be handed down from one part of a family to another. And people actually considered that they owned the houses. But they also would travel quite a bit. And it wasn't too different from some societies, at least today, if I'm thinking of New Zealand, where people travel a lot and sometimes would stay with even strangers. This is a society in which people were much more loving and empathic than what we have today. And that you might say, well, why did we keep that? Well, because you'll hear the rest of the scenario in today's show. Not all the remaining subraces of Atlantis continued to develop as wonderfully as this particular golden age. The people were relatively well educated, but the kind of education that they went through, which started amazingly around 6 years old, not too different from our world today, for many countries, they were taught mostly how to live in an emotional sense, not so much in a mental sense. So they were trying to develop their emotional quotient rather than their intelligence in an intellectual sense quotient. This is very different. So let me give you an example. If you were maybe 7 or 8 years old and you would be going to school, what you'd be learning about is how to deal with certain life circumstances in an astral or emotional way and how to best be able to handle other people and even animals and events around yourself so that you would feel the best in that particular circumstance and so would others. Very different than how we learn things today. I don't even think that we give that consideration in most of our educational situations. This was a focus of their education. It's not the only focus. They did learn how to count, and they learned some very basics about reading. Yes, they even had a written language. But most of that was of minimal importance. I mean, it was the emphasis was really about how to live and how to live in ways that produce the most amount of happiness, pleasure, as well as spiritual development. Ways of communing with their creator and with each other that brought this out during the Golden Age. This was a very important aspect. Another part of the society that would impress all of us, I think, or most of us, is that beauty was a big part of life. People were very concerned about their appearance in terms of the nature of their clothing and jewelry. But beyond that, it wasn't as though they were gaudy and had ostentatious taste. Just the opposite. They lived relatively simply, but they liked things that were simply, in a sense, very attractive and, we'll say, expressed within themselves and from others who saw it, a sense of their own creator. Wow. So in other words, their art was kind of spiritual in a way. It wasn't spiritual like art might be considered inside the Roman Catholic Church, say. No, not at all like that. Actually, it was more art as being an expression of the creator in the way it affects people. How did it affect them? How did it affect other people? It was the question they usually had about it. They apply the same thing to some of their architecture, so that they actually had buildings with grandeur, but not buildings that were just done to make an impression as much as to make a person feel comfortable. They had fountains and they had gardens and things that would imply, by our standards today, a sense of oneness between the individual and the environment. This is important because we try to do some of this ourselves and sometimes fail. Yet here's a whole civilization that for as much as a half a million years or longer was able to achieve this really good balance and result in general. Wow. Politically, they had seven different branches of, we'll say, a system of government that paid attention to the ways in which these energies, we call them seven rays of energies, affect the human body, because we have seven chakras, and the bodies of some animals. And they apply this from their own bodies to the environment and eventually to their civilization, and including their political civilization. And amazingly, it was very effective. Now, you might say, well, if they didn't have all this intelligence, Niles, how did they get there? And part of it was that they had influence from those who had moved on beyond the human kingdom that were sometimes called masters or masters of the ageless wisdom. These people sometimes had contact between them and the Atlanteans, through their students usually, but sometimes direct contact. And they helped this civilization to work through ways of developing such as the political system that I'm describing to you. It was suggested to them, when appropriate, how to develop the system. And then they would do it their own ways, of course. But it was an amazing system. It was semi-democratic. I mean, it wasn't 100% democratic, but it was semi-democratic. And the part that wasn't completely democratic was sort of theocratic. It dealt with a spiritual leader type, like a priestess, who had a vote in this whole system. And they had people who were bureaucrats, in a sense. We could call them governors or kings, but they were really not like completely all-powerful sovereigns or anything. As a matter of fact, they were elected. And they held office for a fairly long period of time. They still had to do what the will of the people was. And they answered to a whole council. Something not too different from a parliament or something of that nature. And their process was to find the most loving way to treat any particular circumstance. This included their court system. The court system, they usually had three judges, no juries, and the judges would listen to cases and decide them based upon more on what was most loving to do rather than most legally codified to do. As a matter of fact, they had very few codified laws, and so the three judges in one place might not rule exactly the same as three judges someplace else in the same circumstances. But since they never considered any two circumstances exactly the same, they didn't see any problem with that. As a matter of fact, they would have probably rebuffed most of the ideas we have today of codified laws, because they would have said, well, it's just not fair, because no two situations are really the same. So if you apply the same judgment in every circumstance, you're going to end up with a lot of people getting hurt. Instead, they tried to find the most loving and empathic way to resolve any situation. And it was usually based upon people getting the best situation possible in a resolution sense. Sort of like, almost like a binding arbitration more than anything else. And in terms of criminality, they dealt with criminals usually through rehabilitation, sometimes through ostracizing people to oftentimes Africa, but sometimes other places as well. And under the rarest of circumstances, someone could be even put to death. But that was very unusual because they didn't really believe that that was the appropriate way to deal with even murder, necessarily. They didn't believe in an eye for an eye like we do in our society. It believes more in a, you know, in a development of a solution to a problem. And sometimes the only solution to a problem was to get rid of the person, either physically or in terms of sending them away. And that sometimes was the only thing they could do. Okay. Now, getting off that particular bent, their educational system in terms of advanced education was to train people to be able to live their life in a way which they felt the best about themselves and others and contributed the most in terms of especially beauty and the sense of their creator being incorporated in whatever they were doing. And this included training them to do all kinds of skilled activities, but also helping them to become creative in the ways that they express those skills. This is different than anything we have today. It might have some similarity to some of the unions, you might call them, trade unions or whatever, going back hundreds, if not a thousand years ago. But, you know, when it first started, of course, in the Middle Ages. But when, and looking at this process, they didn't really do this so much to gain wealth, although that was part of the system, because it did have a monetary system. But they did it more to increase their self-development and meaning in life. Very different than most people live today. This was the golden age of Atlantis. I hope I'm not shocking you all, because most people are a little ethnocentric, and they think that who we are today is as high as you get. You know, like, hey, we're it. Yeah, we've done such a great thing. We're so fantastic. You know what? We're not. These people actually were more spiritual than we were, than we have been. And we have a ways to go. And remember, these are earlier lives than some of us. So we were living a more virtuous existence. Now, also the environment we were living in was not as difficult. And we weren't pressured to develop a third body, which is the mental body, as much. And that causes people to get squirrely and to do weird stuff and to become more aggressive and hostile. But I'm not finished, because I'm going to be telling you about the rest of Atlantis, which is not as rosy as what I've told you so far. But nonetheless, for about over a half million years, and some people would claim it's probably a good million years, this scenario that I've just explained is what took place. They also developed technologically, although some of this it wasn't such a great thing, a means of power and developing a way of both communicating and a way of having a useful power source, which is non-polluting, using the force of gravity itself and its effects on certain ways of building pyramid-shaped crystals, some of them the size of whole buildings and bigger. And they use some of this power to actually allow themselves to do many things that today we do in a more complicated way. It's sometimes using a lot more energy that is unfortunately polluting in nature and kind of dirty. This is a very clean source of power. And it comes from being able to convert gravity directly into another form of energy. It also solves some of the equations that we're presently confused about in terms of unifying the four different fields of force and other things. If you're a physicist, you'll know what I'm talking about. Now, the interesting thing about this is they were able to do this because it was given to them as a technology by, again, those more advanced than the human beings at the time that had already left the human kingdom to become superhumans. Whoa. Now, this turned out to not be the greatest thing, because although for hundreds of thousands of years the four subrace used this technology successfully without any serious problems coming about from it, sure as you can bet, we eventually turned it into something not working too good for us or anyone else. And I'll tell you more about that when we come back. Now, I think it's important to realize that everything I've said aside, this was not a Garden of Eden, and it wasn't a utopia. It was still a much better place than most places you could live today on Earth. And it was a place where people were not deprived. They lived for well over 100 years, by the way, when you talk about longevity. But many people lived 120 or more years. They were extremely healthy. Many of them were actually at least semi, if not complete, vegetarians as well, which is unusual because most people in Atlantis before and after this golden age ate a lot of animals and meat. But this particular subrace, the fourth, developed habits which changed their whole existence, which included, to some extent, their being, we'll say, semi-vegetarians. But we'll come back, and I'll tell you much more about the whole rest of the story about Atlantis, and unfortunately, how come we can't find any signs of it, or very little, few signs of it today.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. M-A-C-F-L-O-U-E-R.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And this is your show for metaphysics and spirituality, and for sure we're talking about that tonight because we're dealing with the prehistory of Atlantis. And we have Mike Run. We have Mike Run on the phone. Hi there. How are you doing?
Good. I want to say thank you for your information and hope everything is going good for you.
It is. It has been a busy year so far, but we're trying to keep up with all the different things we're doing.
That is fantastic. Yeah. I wanted to ask you a few questions about Atlantis, and I appreciate the fact that you're telling us about the emotional focus expansion that was going on in some of the races. The specific question I had, I wonder if you can just illuminate on, is, are there any of the indications of some of the races that came out of Atlantis that migrated to different parts of the world, like Tibet or even the Mayan Indian culture?
Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, I put a little plug in for the textbook I wrote. In chapter nine, I actually go into where each one came from, where they went to, etc. But if you take a look at South America, South America was a much later colony of some of the later Atlantean subraces, particularly there are some remnants of the sixth, but mostly of the seventh subrace you'll find that went towards that direction. And then also North America, also almost exclusively the seventh subrace. You had members of that subrace settling in parts of North America, particularly the eastern parts of North America, where they still have mounds that they haven't even excavated.
Here's a little bit of a specific focus I would like to ask you, because South America is important, but I'm going to ask you a question about Tibet, even being more important than South America, because just following my own intuition and some of the dynamics that even in the world now or in the last 20 or 30 years, is any of this kind of information that my intuition is saying, possibly even, you know how there was a huge influx of people that went to India to go and seek enlightenment?
Sure.
Is any of that relating to Atlantis? Maybe something that came from Tibet that kind of moved into there and even has a fundamental effect even in the world in the last 100 years, where even we as people, some people in the last 30 years in America, were migrating to that whole area. That has a direct relationship to Atlantis.
Sure. Let's put it in perspective, though, time-wise. I think it's important to do that. Because when we're talking about Atlantis, we're talking about a history prior to 9,000 B.C., okay? Prior to that time. So that's a long time ago. And most of the colonies of Atlantis were actually put in place hundreds of thousands or more years ago. And some of these colonies, unfortunately, were destroyed at the same time the continent finally itself was completely inundated. But it was done in pieces. So when you would have one great calamity that would wipe out hundreds of thousands to millions of people on Atlantis proper, you would find the colonies even more sensitive to whatever was taking place if it was a worldwide calamity, and they would be even more affected, depending upon the circumstances. In some cases, that isn't true. Sometimes the main island or main continent of Atlantis was wiped out more in terms of its civilization and population than were some of the colonies. Now, if we look at China and we look at India, and if we get into Tibet, the areas in Tibet, including some parts of Mongolia as well, all of those areas were settled by various colonies of Atlantis. Most of the areas that were originally colonized, though, were closest to the shores, because for any kind of long-distance travel, the Atlanteans had to rely upon ships. They couldn't get there any other way. And so they tended to colonize closer to the shores. And in some cases, the colonies spread out, such as happened in China. And as far as India is concerned, India was colonized somewhat at a different time by a different structure of subrace than were the Chinese.
Right. I'm talking about the focus, you know, from Tibet to India. But at the same time, what I'm really wondering is obviously, even if something hit Atlantis, was there any facet to do with when they left? Was it any kind of like secret society? Did they have any knowledge that they were taking with them that even could be spanned out over a long period of time?
Well, the last, if we go back 13,000 years ago, 11,000 BC, the last of the spiritual disciplined people that were not members of the next race, those beyond human, we'll say, those students were students who had pretty good knowledge about the impending doom, and they started for a couple thousand years to prepare for the end of this entire civilization. They took with them when they left, and they did leave before the calamity of the final inundation of the entire...
Because as an example, because even if we take the part about what I think the Mayan culture is relation left over from Atlantis, because as you were saying, one went to South America, one went, I think, another place like Tibet, but even this complication about 2012 and some of what I'm saying is possibly even all that information comes down from a culture that has been around that long.
Well,
like South American culture.
Sanskrit, which is related to the northern Indian culture, which is closest to Tibet. That particular information is the information that comes from Atlantis. Because, and the reason I say this is if you look at the Upanishads, which the Bhagavad Gita, if you're familiar with that particular book, is part of, if you look at the Upanishads, in there it says that the information that is contained within these volumes comes from Atlantis. Now, I mean, that's a story that goes back thousands of years ago, like 5,000-6,000 years ago, is when the first possible written version of it is, and who knows when it really is related to. And so, obviously, that information goes back in time before 9,000 B.C. Now, the interesting thing is, you know, if we look at the time scale that we're talking about, somewhere between 8,500 and 9,500 B.C., that's when the last ice age ended. And it ended, according to the most recent geological proof, evidence, it ended within a few years, no more than 20 years. And they thought these ice ages ended over thousands of years, and they actually ended in less than 20. So now they're talking about there were some serious changes to the Earth's environment to end an ice age that quickly. And in some cases, they're thinking it may have ended in less than 3 or 4 years. So, I mean, we're talking about a really major change or changes in the Earth, some of them calamitous that may have obviously destroyed a major part of human civilization. Do you have any other questions?
Yeah, that's what I'm just saying. That's interesting. That's interesting stuff. So, but that's why I just want to entertain that possibility, because I think even though we are talking about large amounts of time, I think some of these you know, tens of thousands of years, just the way the world is tough today, some of those races, I know, you know, like they say the Mayan Indians watched the sky for 15,000 years or something.
Well, let me tell you this. This is my understanding, because I think that you may have a different thought about this, so you can tell me if you do. It's all right. But most of what is in Tibetan literature actually relates to northern Indian literature. In other words, the northern Indian literature is predating the Tibetan by thousands of years. The Tibetan is not that old. Many people think of Tibet being a very highly spiritual place, but it actually, if you go back in time, it's only a couple thousand years old in terms of its own history. Before that, it developed as a result, apparently, of some of the Indian culture. So it doesn't, at least there's no evidence today that I'm aware of that predates Indian culture in terms of Tibet. That doesn't in any way mitigate or change the importance of what Tibetan culture is, what there is left of it. Of course, the Red Chinese have pretty much destroyed it, except for what has left in exile, because what's there today is really China. I mean, China has just gone in and destroyed and taken over that culture. Listen, I'm going to try and finish as much as I can. We may have a volume.
Oh, yeah. No problem. I appreciate your interaction and just say thank you for everything.
Good talking with you again. You take care.
Nice talking to you, too.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Well, we won't probably finish today, so maybe next week we'll have Volume 3 of Atlantis, because I'm not going to be able to tell you all the things that took place. You may have caught some of the ideas that I was going to get to. Let me tell you what happened at the end of the Golden Age. There was a lot of changes in terms of the structure of the subrace. From going from the fourth to the fifth subrace, the fifth raid energy takes dominance, meaning the Ajna center, becomes more dominant in people who are, well, living average lives than those who were living in the Golden Age and had developed their sacral center, which is the base of spine, for those of you who are familiar with that. When I say center, I'm talking about chakras, for those of you who are familiar with that word. Okay, so we had people now starting to use their Ajna center, which is much more mental. It's not that these people were as mental as we are today, but they were interested in knowledge, mental knowledge, much more than the earlier incarnations of the fourth subrace. And this is the beginning of the fifth. Now, unfortunately, at the very beginning of the fifth, Some of these people excelled and did very well in terms of mental thought, and they became entrusted with a lot of knowledge because some of them were advanced spiritually. They were spiritual disciples. And the members of the next kingdom, that's sometimes referred to as the kingdom of souls or spiritual kingdom, these great beings, also referred to as masters, would teach these people, teach their students things that involve a great deal of knowledge. Now, the good thing about knowledge is that with it you can create more advanced understandings that can lead to a betterment in civilization, in a higher level of civilization. And in the beginning, this seemed to work pretty well. The only problem was that as time went by, over tens of thousands of years, these spiritual disciples turned out to eventually become very arrogant or egotistical or both. And in that process, they started to use the knowledge to control and manipulate their fellow citizens. And they thought they were special because they had this knowledge. And that is not a good thing. Over time, the ability to manipulate and control became more important than the desire to create love, empathy, and beauty, and all the things that were really made the fourth sub-race society such a great place to live and such a great society. And this also led to the beginnings of the end of what was considered to be the Golden Age. By a million years ago, these people that were the more focused on mental knowledge people became dominant in Atlantean society. And they started to take control. And they wanted to control not just their immediate environment, but in many cases they wanted political control, and they wanted to take over the entire civilization and make it their way. Of course, the way they thought was their way was that they were the important ones, and they decided what was best for everybody else. Well, sound familiar? Yes. Some of us were there. Some of us are living through some of this problem today. And so, interestingly, the whole society kind of changed, and it went bad. It did not stay as it was, because societies are, as people think, and eventually act upon those thoughts in their own creations. And if people are creating a society in which control and manipulation is the hallmark of their existence, you can bet that things are not going to stay very benevolent and wonderful. And they didn't. Now, to tell you any more, I would run out of time. So what I'm going to have to do is probably go into this subject a bit more next week, which is okay. I don't mind. Hopefully you'll stay tuned and want to listen in. I just want to mention that if you have time, this Sunday, you can listen to a show I'm going to be giving on the implications of reincarnation. For those of you who live in the northeastern part of the United States, you can listen directly on 1170 AM radio. If you're anywhere in Boston, Norfolk, Providence, Rhode Island, anywhere around there, you can just listen in. And that'll be from 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you happen to be elsewhere, you can listen in WDISAM.com radio, anywhere in the world, over the Internet. And please do, because I would love for you to have the opportunity to hear this show on this subject. And that's, again, it's 1 to 2 p.m. if you're in Pacific time, 4 to 5 if you're in the Eastern time, or anywhere in between that, you can figure it out for yourself, of course. Now, for next week, I just want to remind you that we will continue on. I will tell you more about the fifth sub-race, the sixth, and the seventh, so that you get an understanding generally of what happened to the Atlantean people and how we can probably learn some lessons from it for today. So I always think we should learn something from history or prehistory as best as we can, as it might apply to our lives in the present time. Well, at any rate, it's been great to have this opportunity to tell you what I could about this very interesting subject. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.